Your Steve Jones Show podcast will start shortly. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Brewers Outlet, your beverage supermarket on Reagan Street in Sunbury. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
And today's show brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket, imports, domestics, microbrews, the best selection anywhere. And our good friends at Brewers Outlet, organized beautifully throughout the store. And on top of that, they also have soft drinks, snacks, they roast the peanuts fresh and hot every day. Bags are right there at the register, and the pickle bar is second to none. It is all at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. I'm in the Sunbury Motors studio, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. And Kevin has been aching to hear this segment because he knows you want to know essentially what to do tomorrow.
I need an exacta, maybe even a trifecta. And the last two races, I think Mr. Girardi has done very well for himself. So I'm listening intently.
And Dick, my broadcast partner for Penn State basketball last dozen seasons, also the Eclipse Award winner and great friend extraordinaire without question. And Dick, this is about as tough as anything to predict about going a mile and a half with a horse for the third time in 5 weeks.
If you look back, there are no flukes winning in the Triple Crown. Right. You had to be really good, and of course the 3 in the 70s were among the greatest in the history of the sport. We're talking Secretary at Seattle, Slow and Affirm.
Bob Baffert, this will be the fourth time he's attempted to do it. Now, obviously, a horse is an athlete, and every athlete is different, has their own personality. But has he learned or changed anything from past experience that he think might help him this time as to how he trained the horse, how much he worked the horse? Has he dealt with that issue at all?
No, I think he has learned, and I think that's why he's so good. And horse training, Steve, is really trial and error more than anything else. And American Pharoah is a classic example of that. They thought he was going to be a superstar from the start, and they were completely stunned when he fell apart and ran terribly in his first race. Well, what they did immediately, they realized, or Bob Baffert did, what the problem was. He was wearing blinkers. He got crazy. They took the blinkers off. And he was also freaked out by all the noise at Del Mar in the paddock. So now they stuff cotton balls in his ear, so he can't hear anything. And since then, of course, he's been undefeated, won all his races by 30 lengths. Yeah, Baffert has learned something, and it's interesting. In the three chances he's had, Steve, let's throw out 2002 with War Emblem. He was kind of a one-dimensional horse. He broke poorly. He was eliminated because he needed the lead to win.
Right.
The other two, Silver Charm lost by less than a length, and Real Quiet lost by an inch.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just horse racing. I mean, that's just bad luck. It wasn't like the horses weren't ready. You weren't well prepared and didn't deserve to win. But sometimes you can run the best horse, Smarty Jones being a great example of that, California Chrome last year, and circumstance beats the horse rather than the distance or the three races in 5 weeks or anything else. So it's a long-winded way of saying, yeah, Baffert's learned some things. He's a really smart guy. Probably certainly in the Triple Crown. I mean, he's really dominated the Triple Crown races for 20 years now. So, yeah, he's learned something.
When you've talked with Bob Baffert or listened to him, Dick, has American Pharoah worked out in terms of some of his workout fractions like a horse that's racing for the third time in 5 weeks, or has it been normal?
He looks as good to me as any horse I've ever seen at the end of this trail, Steve. Now, I saw Smarty Jones closer than anybody because I was one of the people.
Right.
I was the only person, in fact, the last 3 weeks that was at the racetrack every day watching him train. And you could see toward the end at the Belmont, as he was leading up to it, that he was starting to get to him. You could just see it took him a little while longer to get into a gallop. He was a little ouchy at the beginning of it, and John Service knew it. We all knew it. But he almost made it through anyway. He was such a great horse, and unfortunately, he was never able to race again. I don't see that in American Pharoah. He just seems to be as smooth now as he was prior to the Derby. His two workouts have been unbelievable. And the thing you look for in a workout, Steve, beyond what you see during the time part of it, what happens afterward? Is he still rolling? Is he eager to run? The answer is yes. And I watched his gallop this morning, and he's still eager to run. I mean, this horse, it's amazing. You don't usually see him come through here. Now, one of the problems is it may not show up the grind until the final 200 yards tomorrow, and then we'll know what the toll it took. But right now, he looks great.
Last year, Espinoza was on California Chrome, and it was not the smoothest ride, as you've pointed out on the show several times. It was not the smoothest ride in the Belmont last year for him. It was interesting in listening to him post-Preakness, where the rain changed his strategy and he went to the front. And I sat back and I said to myself, I wonder what his strategy was before, because he just let the horse run. Is this one of the X factors that he's riding this horse in this race?
Yes. Yeah, I mean, he really rode terribly, I thought, on California Chrome last year. Now, he'll tell you that he was planning to go to the front last year with California Chrome from the inside, but he got stepped on, and he did. And he had that cut, remember, when he came back right after the race. And so the horse didn't really want to run to the front. Well, if you watch the replay, he wasn't asking the horse to run to the front. He rode very tentatively. I don't know what he was talking about after the Preakness, because Baffert told us right after the race, he told him 3 days before, we're going to the front. So I'm not sure why he just said he decided to go to the front. The rain started, which made no sense. Now, the tactics tomorrow are as obvious. I mean, it should be obvious to anybody who's ever been to a racetrack. This is the only horse with any early speed at all,
right,
other than materiality. And I don't think they're sending materiality to the front. So he really should be able to control the race from in front. And I think materiality would be the one closest to him. And he's got a great jockey in Johnny Velasquez. And look, American Pharoah's got the target. Everybody's looking to beat him tomorrow. It's just a question of when Johnny wants to try to go after him and see if he can run him down. But Victor doesn't have to think tomorrow. Just put your horse in front. That's the best place to win races. Well, we talk about this all the time during basketball games, Steve, you and I, but playing from the front is huge. I'm telling you, it's just the way you want to play, because there's just game pressure on you when you're behind. You can't make mistakes. If you're playing from in front, you can mess up a couple things and still win. But running from behind in a horse race is no different. You always rather be in front.
Frost and Materiality are two of the horses that ran the Derby. Now they come back 5 weeks later and run. What are your thoughts on each? And obviously Materiality is Johnny V aboard.
My thoughts are that both are very solid horses. I thought Frost had run terrific in the Derby. Finished fourth. Remember, the Derby was essentially a parade. The first three finishers were the first three all the way around. They just changed positions in the stretch. Nobody made up any ground in the race except Frost. He's been off the 5 weeks, as you said. He's trained by Kieran McLaughlin, who has won the Derbies, won the Breeders' Cup Classic, a very high-caliber trainer. He's the son of Tappet, who's the world's best sire. So Frosted has every reason to run well at his home racetrack. Materiality put a line through his Derby. He was eliminated at the start. He broke poorly in the big field, got behind horses for the first time in his life, took an incredible amount of dirt, sand, and kickback, and still came running at the finish to finish a respectable sixth. He's the son of a Fleet Alex who won the race 10 years ago and won it like a really good horse, like a mile and a half was no problem. And he's trained by Todd Pletcher, who annually wins the award as the leading trainer in the country. Can't win the Derby, has real problems down there, one for 43. But he's won the Belmont twice since 2007, so he knows how to win the Belmont. Those are definitely the two horses that the American Pharoah's people have to be most concerned with.
It is a race where it is not unusual, and I believe I'm correct in saying this, it's not unusual of late to have a Belmont-only entrant win it. So there are obviously some Belmont-only entrants in here. Is there a threat in that group?
I think probably Made from Lucky would be the biggest one.
Okay.
He won the Peter Pan Stakes, which is the exact same race Tonalist won last year, also trained by Todd Pletcher. Also home base at Belmont Park. Now, he ran against American Pharoah in Arkansas and was just drilled twice. So he's got a lot of lengths to make up. But it's really not about him making up the lengths. It's just a question of, is American Pharoah the same horse that's been running
right
all year long? If he is, he's going to win. I mean, that's not even an issue. if this was just, I wrote about it today, if this was just in a vacuum,
right,
we'd just say, all right, which is the best horse here? We're not having a conversation. But he's the best horse who's had to run all three legs where others have not, and none of the other ones have. So that's the edge they have, because in horse racing, rest is even bigger than it is in sports, because mm-hmm. they're animals. They can't take care of themselves. Like, I mean, people know how to get the proper rest sometimes, horses right. do not.
And for the those who may not read, Tonalist is the one that won the Belmont last year.
Correct.
That Dick
exactly
referenced right,
right yep.
there. That's why I asked the Baffert question at the beginning, because of the rest factor. You know, what had he learned along the way that might fit this time through, because it is so unusual.
It's interesting. The only horse he's ever won the Belmont Stakes with, Steve, was Point Given in 2001.
Yeah.
And he ran in all three. He was beaten. It was the only race he lost all year was the Derby in 2001. And more what happened was Gary Stevens made a rare tactical mistake. He had him too close to a really fast pace, and he got tired. And he slaughtered the field in Preakness, and he won the Belmont by 12. So clearly Bob knows how to win the Belmont. And I mentioned he'd been close twice before, the other two times
right.
he'd gone for the Triple Crown. So he's had horses come through the grind, out the other side, and run really well in the Belmont Stakes. So... And I suspect he learned some things from them, but I think the thing he's got maybe going for him most with American Pharoah, it's going to sound a little weird, but because he got injured before the Breeders' Cup last year, he missed a lot of time. And there was some concern he would even make the Derby. But his two races prior to the Derby were essentially paid workouts, the
right.
ones in Arkansas.
Sure.
They were not hard. They were not hard on the horse. And they were helping him get fit. That's why the Derby looked so hard, because that really was the race where he hit his peak fitness, and that's why he crushed him in the Preakness. So he's a little different than some horses who maybe have been trained hard since the first of the year. His first time workout wasn't until late January.
Right.
So a lot of people didn't think he was going to make it because it got so late. In fact, I think Bob, I've asked him about it. He says he always had faith in the horse, but if one little thing had gone wrong, he was out.
Right.
You can't make up time if you have to miss a week. And in horse racing, that's everything. But I think he's maybe he still hasn't hit his peak yet. I think there's a chance he could win by a big number tomorrow. There's that chance. I'm not making that prediction because I just think there's too many unknowns. It wasn't like the Preakness where I told you he was a cinch.
Yep.
He was going to win by a lot. That
right.
was easy.
I mean, you told me the night after the Derby. I mean, you were talking about that Saturday night of the Kentucky Derby. So Steve, he'll win the Preakness big.
Yeah, and that was just because you could tell that was the race that was going to get him fit, and the Preakness is just, it's a different kind of a race. And when he got to the front, that race was just over. I do think he could win this race by a lot. That would not shock me if that happens.
Right.
It would also not shock me if he gets beat, just because of the nature of what we've been dealing with all these incredibly talented horses. Now, in slightly different circumstances than his, it got beat. I mean, look, if Smarty Jones, who's a spectacular bid, can lose this race, then obviously American Pharoah can lose.
Right, and those are two of the great racehorses of all time who ended
no
up
question.
Not winning. You know,
right.
I mean, and there's certain, like, a Fleet Alex was a great horse but didn't win the Derby. I mean, Damascus was a great horse, and I don't think Damascus won the Derby but won the Preakness and the Belmont. So, I mean, you just don't know.
You don't. It's interesting. There's only two horses in this century that have come all the way through and won the Belmont Stakes. Point Given in 01
yep.
and a Fleet Alex in 2005. Neither won the Derby, but they ran it all three and were able to win the Belmont. So even the horses that came through all three and maybe either didn't win either or did only won one of them, they've not been able to win the Belmont. It's just right. It's such a hard thing. A Fleet Alex is the last one, and he was a very unusual horse and trained in a very unusual fashion by Tim Ritchie, who did such a great job with him. He had this energy that just never ended. But, yeah, so we're talking 10 years since a horse has run, any horse has run in all three and won
right.
the Belmont.
Amazing. One more item on Baffert. He also trains Dortmund. Dortmund's not going to run this race. And these they train multiple horses all the time across the board. But does it help him at all that for this race he can just lock in on one?
Yeah, I don't think there's any question of this. Yeah, I mean, he's just had to worry about this horse. Because, look, it's stressful, and especially because you have two different owners.
Yes.
Right? It's not the same owner who's happy with either horse. And Dortmund came into the Derby undefeated.
Right.
There was a lot of heat on Bob with that horse. The good news is the owner of Dortmund, Kaleem Shah, is a real quiet, reserved guy, the exact opposite of Ahmed Zayed, who I'm sure you've seen him. He's just a wild man.
Yes, he is.
And his son. His son, Justin, who just graduated from NYU. I mean, they're action people, but they're a little crazy and they're a bit overbearing, so it's not the easiest thing to deal with. I mean, I think at one point, Bob, a couple of years ago, fired him because he was so irritated with him, and then he got him back. They've been hired and fired a couple of times. Usually the owners fire the trainer. They're so crazy, the trainers are firing the owners. But to their credit, they come out firing. I mean, they're not worried about spending money, and look, all the money they've spent, and they spent a ton of it. Well, they got it all back with interest on this horse, because this horse is a homebred. They bred him themselves. They actually tried to sell him at Saratoga 2 years ago, couldn't get the price they wanted, kept him, and now they get themselves a $20 million horse.
Obviously, casinos have meant something to getting people at least to go back to the track. They may be sitting in the back area, but they're at least in the park, you know, have cars in the parking lot. What can tomorrow do for the sport? Is it one of those great moments, or does it have some lasting effect on the sport?
It's a great question. It's actually the question I posed as I led my column that I wrote for tomorrow's paper, Steve. I don't think any of us really know, because think about the world we lived in 1978, right?
Yeah.
No ESPN. I would not be talking to you on a cell phone because they didn't exist.
Right.
No social media, no internet. So, you know, what is the reaction going to be? I don't know. Go back to Secretariat. He's on the cover of three magazines.
Right.
One of those magazines doesn't exist. Newsweek.
Right.
It's gone. Time and Sports Illustrated were the other two. Magazines don't hold the same cachet in the country that they did back then. I really don't think we know. Do I think they're going to storm the gates of all racetracks on Sunday if he wins? No, I don't.
Right.
I think, will people be really interested in seeing American Pharoah run the next time? Sure. Is it a good weekend to do it? Because there really isn't much else happening anywhere in sports, for sure. And I think it's a short-term, it's a good thing for the game, for sure. And I think that maybe more people are interested in saying, hey, what's this all about? And they might go. But the problem is, Steve, the game is you got to have patience. You got to have patience to understand the game. You got to have patience to hang with it, to own horses. And that's not a trait a lot of Americans have these days,
no.
Given how fast the world is. I mean, just the world, everything is so quick.
A little more than a year ago, you took Jeff Tarman and me up to Saratoga. You wanted to, you know, show where you stay, show us the track, show us the town. We went out to eat. Lillian's, I think, is the place we went
to. That is correct, on Broadway.
What is that scene like when you go up there, and what has made that a place and a track in the summer that people want to go to?
An event, Steve. That's why the Triple Crown is still so popular. I mean, the Derby is more popular than it's ever been. Now, Tuesday at Parks Racing is not real exciting, right? Because it happens. They run 4 days a week all year round. But they got 170,000 in Kentucky and record crowd at the Preakness and all the big crowd tomorrow in New York because it's an event. Same with Saratoga. It's a limited meeting. It's about 6 weeks in the summertime. It's just a place you want to be. It's all these old, you were up there, you and Jeff were up there, these old Victorian homes. Red Smith has the great line, the great New York Times writer from back in the day. He said, you drive 175 miles north, turn left on Union Avenue, and go back 100 years. And that's it. That's Saratoga. I mean, it's like from another time. There's the Canfield Casino. It evokes a time when horse racing was the nation's most popular sport. Obviously, that changed when all the different gambling games came online in the 70s with lotteries and now casinos everywhere. Just too much competition for the dollar. But, yeah, Saratoga is a feeling. They stopped traffic on Union Avenue, which is the street that bisects the training track and the racetrack.
Mm-hmm.
They stopped traffic for horses. Horses have the right-of-way out there. if the listeners, you ever get a chance, you're in upstate New York, it's 30 minutes north of Albany. It's definitely worth a trip up in July and August to see Saratoga.
I hear you. I think one of these days I shall do it. So when they were actually racing.
Yeah, it was a little different when it was freezing up there in March.
It's a little different when I thought to myself, I don't think they can run through the snowdrift there in the second turn.
It's a summer racetrack. There will be no winter racing at the Spa.
All right, so quick hint. What is just one final question. So what does your gut tell you as to how you'd like to approach it when you go to a window?
Yeah, I'm probably going to play this race two ways, Steve. I'm going to bet a little exact, and I don't know how much, depends on what it pays, American Pharoah over Keen Ice. And the reason I'm going to play it that way, in case Materiality and Frosted really make a run at American Pharoah, say, at the top of the stretch with 400 yards to go, and he just sloughs them off like he did in the Preakness, well, I think they're going to collapse.
Right.
They're going to get tired. Then I'm looking for a late-running horse. And I'm also going to play a little Materiality over American Pharoah because I think Materiality is the most likely winner if it's not American Pharoah. So basically I'm playing scenarios, which is kind of how I play the races. Somebody said, well, that sounds a little weird, you're playing different horses. But that's just, I play races off how I think they'll be run.
Right.
I'm pretty sure I know who's going to be where in this race, and that's everything. That's understanding how races are going to be run is absolutely everything if you try to cash a ticket.
Always great, my friend. Thanks so much, Dick.
You got it, Steve. We'll see you soon.
Okay. Taking notes, Kevin Herr. We'll find out what those notes reveal after the bottom of the hour. News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Brewers Outlet.
The best get-togethers start with a trip to the beverage supermarket, Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury. Why? Because Brewers Outlet has not only a great selection of beer, including imports and microbrews, but also a lot more. Brewers Outlet has water, soda, they roast their peanuts every day, and you can't forget about stopping by the pickle bar. Look for great deals on wine coolers and all your favorite snacks. Before you enjoy those special times with family and friends, make your visit first to the beverage supermarket, Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury.
If you think you can't afford a new car,
Sunbury Motors Hyundai says you can.
Sunbury Motors Hyundai is Central Pennsylvania's volume Hyundai dealer.
We sell volume by making brand new Hyundais more affordable than other import brands.
Listen to this.
A brand new 2016 Hyundai Elantra Value Edition comes with push button start, sunroof, Bluetooth, alloy wheels, and sells for only $17,827
or $218 per month.
You have to hurry because these 29 Elantras will be gone in 2 weeks. All new Hyundais come with a 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain warranty. A brand new Elantra with lots of stuff for only $218 per month and comes with a 10-year, 100,000-mile warranty.
And it's not a lease, you own it.
No wonder Sunbury Motors Hyundai is the volume Hyundai dealer in Central PA. Sonatas, Santa Fe's, Tucson's, and Velocitors are all priced at volume pricing. Remember, when you think you can't afford a new car, Sunbury Motors Hyundai says
you can.
Hurry into Sunbury Motors Hyundai in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury.
$218 per month for 84 months at 3.89% with 10% down plus tax and
taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
And today's show being brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. Imports, domestics, microbrews, best selection anywhere without question. Did I mention beer? Also has soft drinks, snacks. They roast their peanuts fresh and hot every day. Bags are right there at the register. And the pickle bar is second to none. Stock up for the weekend right now at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. I'm in the Sunbury Motors studio, Sunbury Motors 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. I said to Kevin Herr, I said, look, I want to have somebody on that has the best sounding Twitter handle in America. And we ended up with at Copa Cavana. Alan Cavana from Fox joins us. Welcome, Alan. Great to have you with us.
Great to be on here. What an introduction. I appreciate it.
No problem. Hey, look, one Connecticut kid to another Connecticut kid. Why not? All right. So
there you go. It's good to be back in this part of the country.
Yeah, you grew up in Marlboro, I grew up in Enfield, and now you're here in our backyard at Pocono for this weekend's race. Tell us about the job with NASCAR Race Day, because Pocono means a lot to you personally in this journey, as does Dover. Explain how that came about.
Well, it does. I mean, I've been a lifelong NASCAR fan, racing fan. I got to do it growing up. My grandfather raced sprint cars professionally. and he passed that down to my grandfather, and I raced these little cars called quarter midgets growing up, but I had never been to an actual race. So one thing led to another, and through a guest speaker at college, I went at Syracuse University, I made some connections, and I got to work. One of the first races I ever saw was from the broadcast booth here at Pocono Raceway with Fox, and that was, God, 12 years ago at this point, and I'm working my way back up there, so it worked out.
Yeah, it sure did. Did you ever race Stafford?
You personally? No. I like to say, you know, you either run out of talent or money. I don't know which one I ran out of, so I race little cars, and I retired at age 15, so...
this is a special race for people here at Penn State. I did an event with Jeff Gordon 3 weeks ago where they brought out the car, the Penn State decorated car that he'll have on the track on Sunday. This is the second time he's done this. He also did this at Texas A&M. How important is that kind of outreach for drivers to connect like that with the fan base?
It's super important, especially locally. I mean, just, you know, we think of it as a national sport, and of course it is. Heck, it's an international sport. But, you know, when it comes to attracting fan base and getting the fans here and really connecting, you know, the track with its surrounding fan base, it's important to have these partnerships. And Jeff Gordon has always been an ambassador for NASCAR. It doesn't surprise me he's been involved in both of these. And, you know, you think of other professional sports teams, how they're so ingrained. You know, I'm from Charlotte, the Charlotte Hornets. There's always something going on in the community with the Charlotte Hornets. You know, they're everywhere. And the, you know, tracks try to do the same. It's just kind of a different model because it's not an actual team. It's just the track. So being able to expand out and get that community feel, you know, so many Penn State fans, hopefully some of them can be NASCAR fans, and maybe they'll convert some of them into Jeff Gordon fans.
Well, when I did the event with him here at Penn State, the crowd was enormous. I mean, that was the kind of draw that he was able to at least get, and then, of course, the connection with the car. But he was an absolute draw. When I talked to him that day, one of the questions I asked him for the benefit of the crowd was, every track has its own personality. The Tricky Triangle certainly is that. Alan, when you look at the Tricky Triangle with three distinctly different turns and a long straightaway, what are some elements that stick out to you that they have to negotiate here to have a successful event?
Well, the hardest part about just about any track is getting through the corner, because that's where you can either have a lot of speed or lose a lot of speed. And here, there's a third corner, which all the teams have to deal with. So, that, I mean, you're already increasing the number of things they have to deal with by one when you add that third corner. And then all the corners are different, so you have to worry about setup and trying to make your car great on every single one of those. And this way, today, the story has been, I mean, after the long winter you guys had, you know, that affects the pavement. We know what potholes are like, if you will. Everyone knows how the weather affects those. In turn two here, they call it the tunnel turn. It's subtle in terms of what you can see with your eye, but there is a big dip in the track, unfortunately, and a lot of drivers are really, you know, concerned about that, what it's going to do to their car, because they run almost papers, you know, papers with on top of the track, if you will, and it's making their cars bounce, and that is not what they were expecting, and then that's due to what the winter did to the track. So they're having to negotiate that, and they're saying some of their cars are flying up in the air when they're going through turn two.
Alan, by the way, was named the Broadcaster of the Year by the National Motorsports Press Association just 2 years ago, which we congratulate you on that. You're part of NASCAR Race Day. Discuss what you try to bring out in NASCAR Race Day that brings the fan closer to the event.
Well, I just try to, you know, give understanding. You know, I've been a lifelong fan of the sport and grew up in the sport, and if something seems to interest me, I've tried to take that approach where, you know, it may interest a lot of other race fans. So I try, you know, that's interesting. Why don't I ask about that? And, you know, I found that's worked. It seems to have worked. There's been good feedback from the things I've tried to explain and show people and put in layman's terms and just tell the story of why something's important or why someone is important. And you really show people who these drivers are. Just had a great segment on our show, Race Hub, this week. You know, just driving to work with one of these guys as they go to a shop, a young guy named Alex Mowen. And, you know, that relaxed atmosphere really allows us to tell their story and get inside their head and tell the important stories that are going on. And I try to bring that every weekend, especially in our pre-race show, which is race day.
Kevin's a big Dale Jr. fan. He picks him every week. I still try to point out there are 42 other drivers. Right, Kev?
Yeah, I mean, nobody hotter at Pocono right now, though.
Absolutely.
But what has allowed him to get back into the winner's circle after running decently for several years, but what's allowed him to make the next step and be consistent with it?
Well, it was the relationship with Steve Letard. That was his former crew chief now, but there was a struggle there, you know, say, from about 2008, when he first got to Hendrick and the best equipment. You know, there was a long struggle, and it took a lot of just getting used to the relationship with his crew chief, Steve Letard, and, you know, having those personalities come together, and we saw how much that paid off last year. Unfortunately for Junior Nation, you know, Steve Letard is off the box now, and they have Greg Ive, who seems to have picked up where they left off a little bit. You know, it's a different person, it's a different relationship, and that's something they have to foster. But in terms of the Pocono success, it's somewhere that benefits having a good car and a strong motor because of the high speeds, that long straightaway you mentioned, and that's something Hendrick has always had. And that's really benefiting Dale Jr., where if you can put yourself in position to have a good car at the end of the race, it's hard to pass nowadays. So if they can get out front, someone like Dale Jr. could win again this weekend.
What has allowed Kevin Harvick to be consistent on an every week basis?
That is an excellent question. I'd get paid a lot more money if I knew that actual answer. But
you'd be owning a car.
Absolutely. I mean, you have to point to whatever is going right in the head of his crew chief, Rodney Childers. Rodney Childers, when he got together with Kevin Harvick and that Stuart Haas team, they started anew. You know, sometimes when you add a car or you bring some new people over, you know, you might get the stuff from last year. No, when they came in 2014, they started everything new, every single toolbox, every single drill, everything was bought brand new for that team. And they started from the bottom and built up together. That just seems to keep benefiting them. Obviously, they won a championship, but they started off this year almost better than they were last year. Rodney Childers, it was announced this morning, he got a new contract, a multi-year contract. He says Kevin Harvick will be the last driver he ever works with. So, you know, I wish I could explain what makes them so good. Obviously, it's speed, it's working together, but it's that car, no matter where we are, always seems to be out front, and that is a direct benefit, a result of the driver and crew chief combination.
When you're around this all the time, where does Danica Patrick now stand with the fan base, and why is it that she can't break the top 15?
Tough question. Well, with the fan base, she's one of NASCAR's most popular drivers. We saw that just a few weeks ago in the All-Star race. They have a fan vote for drivers who don't make it, and she won. And I think the numbers will show. There's all sorts of research and everything that shows just how popular she is with fans in terms of merchandise sales and ad buys. Remember, she holds the record for Super Bowl commercials. I mean, there's a reason they're doing this. It's not just because she's, you know, just because she's a female, if you will. You know, there are other reasons for this, because she does resonate with the fans. Now, in terms of performance, you know, it's a tough deal for her, because she gets probably more attention than she deserves. I don't think you could argue that. And she probably gets more criticism than she deserves. Remember, this is her third full-time year in these big cars. Right. She came from IndyCar. Anybody else who's trying to do what is expected of her, or seems to be expected of her, in only 3 years in stock cars, I mean, you would say that's unfair. But you don't really say that about Danica, because she gets all the attention. So much more is expected of her. Now, why can't she run in the top 15? I think she's learning. She is getting better. If you compare this year to last year, she is improving. What she's been really improved on is, what's hurt her in the past is the bad finishes, say 30th or worse, or 35th or worse. That has just killed her in points. And that, the way the point system works in NASCAR, that'll just hurt you at the end of the year, because a bad run is way worse than a good run is good, if that makes sense. I apologize if that doesn't. But
I know what you mean. Yep.
So far she has avoided those bad days, and that has helped her. Every track she goes back to, she seems to be improving. Now, people look at that and say, well, she's not in the top 10, she's not winning races, but, you know, it's incremental. You're not going to go from finishing 25th to finishing 4th every week. But she's getting there, or she's at least headed in an upward trajectory more than she was last year. And that's really all you could ask of someone with her experience. But when you put in the name Danica Patrick, when you put in all the stuff and that attention that goes with her, you know, she's held to a different standard.
Well, back in the late 60s, Mario Andretti, for the heck of it, took a Daytona 500 run, and it was embarrassing for the good old boys. He won. A.J. Foyt took a run at the Daytona 500, and it was embarrassing for the good old boys because he showed up and he won. Now things have been changed. I just mentioned Danica Patrick. Tony Stewart's one of the few guys that made the move from IndyCar to NASCAR, and he's been able to win. But Allmendinger, Hornish, Montoya, who just won Indy just a couple, you know, just a week ago, he won, had very little NASCAR success. Yet when they get to NASCAR, I saw a story, Alan, where not one of them wants to go back to Indy. They want to stay in this. So two-part question, then I'll let you go on this. What makes this so attractive for them to stay on this side and not want to go back to Indy, and why is it such a tough transition to NASCAR?
Well, I think the fact of the direction they want to go, Indy to NASCAR, you know, people have tried, and I think that proves NASCAR's viability as the top motorsport in the world, frankly. I mean, F1 fans will argue with you, but certainly in America, it's the most popular American form of auto racing. And numbers will tell you that, money will tell you that, and I think that's why drivers want to come over here, because they know how good the competition is, and it pays the most amount of money, and it has the most attention, it has the most sponsorship, it has, you know, all that stuff. Now, and it also, you know, it's a proving ground in terms of, you know, this isn't the late 60s anymore. We've seen Tony Stewart, as you mentioned, probably pound for pound one of the greatest drivers of our generation because of what he can do in all those different types of cars. Juan Montoya was right up there, especially with his F1 experience, but he couldn't win on an oval in NASCAR. Dario Franchitti, he tried to come over here, lasted half a season in NASCAR. I think what we're seeing is there's just nothing like it in the world in terms of these huge cars that weigh a lot, that have so much power under them. And, you know, there's 43 of them, and when you combine all that power and weight and then throw in the aerodynamics of it all, it's hard to figure out. It really is. You know, just, you know, even for some drivers, just sitting on the left side of a car, and think of an Indy car, you're in the center. It's completely different. And then you come over here, it's just a different world. And that's a challenge for some people. And what I think is the most interesting is when you see a guy like Kurt Busch last year at Indy, when he goes out in his first Indy race ever in the Indianapolis 500 and finishes sixth. I think that may be one of the most impressive things we've seen in my lifetime in auto racing, is when he went out and did that. And that speaks to his talent and just the fact of the talent of NASCAR drivers in general.
Excellent answer. See, Kevin, the weight part of it, that's what I've been trying to tell you, Kevin, the weight part of it, it's really, you know, weight and power, that's you. That's Kevin.
But it goes back to Danica, too. I mean, it's hard to get used to.
Sure.
If you don't grow up racing all these things, these full-bodied, heavy cars, you're used to a high-powered car and a lightweight vehicle. And if you've never done it, it's really, really hard.
Well, so, and you
talk to Alan, what she's done.
Alan, that, well, remember, Alan, when she raced IndyCar, they complained that she's a little bit more than 100 pounds. She's 100, 205 pounds, something like that. And they said that was a huge advantage for her in an IndyCar, being that light.
They had to put ballast in the car.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yep. And so it's a big transition.
You know, one thing you said that I never really thought about, though, Alan, was the 42 drivers. I mean, that creates an enormous amount of traffic that you don't normally see with half as many cars on an IndyCar track. I mean, let's face it, IndyCar only runs 33 at Indianapolis. Everything else is in the 20s.
Mm-hmm. And it's a full field every week. You're not always racing against all 42. You know, hopefully they get out of your way once in a while. But, you know, with that and the different variety of tracks that they go to and still have that full field, and especially all the aero concerns they're talking about, aerodynamics and how hard it is to pass with the way, you know, air flies off the car nowadays. I mean, that all, you know, people with a lot of experience have trouble doing that, never mind someone trying to make the transition from Indy to NASCAR.
Hey, Alan, this was a lot of fun. You were just terrific. Thanks for some great answers and great insight. And we look forward to the Pocono race on Sunday. I know a lot of Penn State fans here are interested to see how well Jeff Gordon does. But thanks for your time. Great guest.
No problem. I appreciate the opportunity. Love being here in the Northeast. And, you know, turn on race day before the race on FS1 on Sunday. We'll have some great stuff for you.
We sure will. Thank you very much, Alan. The best Twitter handle going. at Copacabana. We'll wrap it up in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
The best get-togethers start with a trip to the Beverage Supermarket, Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury. Why? Because Brewers Outlet has not only a great selection of beer, including imports and microbrews, but also a lot more. Brewers Outlet has water, soda, they roast their peanuts every day, and you can't forget about stopping by the Pickle Bar. Look for great deals on wine coolers and all your favorite snacks. Before you enjoy those special times with family and friends, make your visit first to the Beverage Supermarket, Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury.
A stock up for the weekend. Belmont Stakes is tomorrow. Pocono Race is on Sunday. Stanley Cup Final takes place on Saturday night. NBA Finals game will be on Sunday night, the four big events of the weekend, led by the Belmont. Ratings in last night were a 13-14 on the NBA Finals. Stanley Cup Final got the second highest ever for a game one, 4.3. The Belmont's going to shatter all sorts of records, I think, coming up tomorrow. And Pocono Race will do just fine as well. Those are the four big events of the weekend. But the Stanley Cup Final off to a great start. I mean, last year, New York, Los Angeles, Chicago, Tampa beat it out in the ratings. Amazing. And then the Golden State Cleveland last night was a whopper in terms of interest across America. Anything you want to add that we should watch?
No.
Like, there isn't like some go-kart race like in the neighborhood or something? Or
actually, I wish I'd love to drive go-karts.
Today's show brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury. The Beverage Supermarket, imports, domestics, microbrews. I mentioned beer. Stock up for these great events. Sit back in front of that beautiful HD TV of yours with beverages from Brewers Outlet. Soft drink, snacks, roast the peanuts, fresh and hot every day. You need a snack. Pickle bar, second to nuts, all at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the Beverage Supermarket. Cannot stress, stop there on your way home and make sure you're ready for the weekend. And, of course, we're in the Sunbury Motors Studio, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Key Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. Oh, the Memorial Golf Tournament's this weekend as well, Jack Nicklaus's tournament.
And where's Tiger?
He's trying to make the cut right now. He's way behind. He's not going to win. But
he was one over the last I saw yesterday.
Yeah, he finished one over yesterday, but he's playing the late round today. We'll check the leaderboard here in a moment. And the leader's at 12 under par. I know Mickelson's at 4 under. Spieth is at 5 under.
Tiger Woods cooled off after a hot start to avoid his first missed cut at the Memorial. So it looks like he did make the cut.
Well, there you go. Aren't they happy? He'll be the first guy out tomorrow.
there we go. He shot, let's see. He's right now 3 under.
No, he's in good shape.
3 under going under the 14th.
Yeah, the cut is even.
For the day, that is. He's 3 under for the day.
Yeah, he's 2 under for the tournament.
2 under for the tournament.
2 under for the tournament. Cut's even. All right, go ahead. Tell everybody where the IndyCar guys are.
Texas for the Firestone 600 under the lights Saturday night.
8 cars have qualified.
No, actually, right now, I think it's 17 right now in the qualification going on as we speak. Will Power has the pole, by the way. Marco Andretti right now is qualified in the top 10.
That's not hard to do.